welcome to the Vine Life Podcast. I'm Tony Clark, your host. And today I've got an internationally acclaimed, award-winning recording artist. She's also a singer-songwriter, and her name is Jean Watson. She recently released her highly anticipated new Christmas album, Behold Carols of Worship. Now, on this album, she's joined by a music legend in Phil Kagi. Now, in this new album, Jean breathes new life into classic Christmas carols. Now, more information about Jean, this album, and her other endeavors can be found at jeanwatson.com. And that's J-E-A-N, jeanwatson.com. But Jean, thank you so much for coming on today and talking about your new album.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, it's an honor on my side. And Jean, I'd just like to start with your intriguing story about how God worked in your life, and it's kind of a Christmas story. We're in the Christmas season, I think, and this story kind of relates to the album that you're coming out with now. But tell us a little bit about your story. You were at a point in your life where you were kind of at a crossroads and not sure where to go, or you're having some difficulties, but God really changed your life and gave you a new direction. You want to speak about that?
Yes, he did. So it was a difficult time in my life. I had gone through a painful divorce, and I was living as a single mother at the time of four kids in a rented house. And I was really struggling emotionally, financially, and spiritually, and really felt like I had somehow missed God's plan for my life and made some decisions that weren't God's best for me. And I was living out the consequences of those choices. And so I had a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of regrets, and a lot of sense of hopelessness. And so I prayed that year, it was 20 years ago this year, and I prayed that God would meet me in my hopelessness and sort of give me a second chance. And not long after that prayer, it was Christmas time, and my landlord came and brought us a Christmas tree. And so he's dragging this tree in the house, and when he arrived, there was a recording of me singing Christmas carols, playing in the house that I had made for a friend, and just real simple, you know, just very low tech. And so he heard this music and he stopped and he said, "What is that?" And I said, "That's just a gift I made for a friend." And he said, "No, who's singing?" And I said, "Well, that's me." And he was stunned and he sat down on the couch and he actually put his head in his hands and he just wept. He was very moved by the sound of my voice, or maybe my broken heart. I don't know what it was, but he was moved. And he said, "I don't know what you're doing with your life, but that's what you're supposed to be doing with your life." So we talked about what it would take to record a real album and how much money that would cost. And he said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you your rent money back, and I want you to use it to record." And so that seed money was what gave me the confidence to record my first Christmas album 20 years ago this year.
Oh, that's amazing. And yeah. I have to ask, I'm thinking this, is the landlord, is he still around? Did he see your career? Or?
He saw the beginnings of it. He saw it taking off. And unfortunately, he had a heart attack quite a few years ago now. So he's no longer with us. But his wife came to one of my Christmas concerts quite recently, and she knows that I dedicated my new album, Behold Carols of Worship, to him, to his memory. But he was around to see my recording career take off and also my ministry take off. He saw me beginning to travel to Europe and tour England, sharing my story with other people and inviting them to call upon God in their darkness and change their lives as well. So he saw it take off and he was just so excited.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And Jean, I've got to ask, watching some of your videos and your performances and listening to your albums, you have an incredible voice, a stunning voice, and you're extremely talented playing the violin. So apparently you were at a crossroads at some point, but you picked up the violin and singing at a much earlier age, correct?
I did,
you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I grew up in a musical family. My parents were both amateur singers. My mother was a public school music teacher, and my dad just sang for fun. But there was a lot of classical music in my house growing up. And when I was a little girl, my mother gave me a little plastic record player and Christmas records and classical music. And so that's what I grew up listening to, and folk songs of the world. You know, it was very conservative music. And so those things, you know, I was brought up in that environment, and my dad used to take me to the symphony. And so I wanted to play an instrument. And when I was seven, they introduced the stringed instruments in our public school. I was going into third grade. So I saw a violin. That was the first instrument that was shown to me. And I just kind of said, okay, I'll take that one. So I love to tell people that if they had shown me a tuba when I was seven, I'd be playing tuba concerts. So I started playing the violin, and I just, I guess I was good at it. It came very naturally to me. And then I ended up pursuing violin as a career. I went to university and got a master's degree in violin performance. And I always thought that that would be my career, but God had other plans for that gift.
Well, I guess thank God that the first instrument that you did not see was an accordion or something like that. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's fast forward. You've had many albums since then, and the album that's out currently is called "Behold Carols of Worship." Mm-hmm. And if you don't mind, can we go through each song, and I'll just get your thoughts on each song on each track on the album?
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, I'd love that.
Well, again, if you want to look at, if you want to download this album, you can certainly go to GeneWatson.com and you can download this album. I highly encourage you to do that. It's a tremendous album, especially during this Christmas season. But I think track number one, Gene, is "Come Thou Long Expected Jesus."
Yes.
Your thoughts on this? Tell me the recording process. How did this come about?
Well, that was a song that had been on my heart for a long time. I just couldn't get it out of my brain. It was one of those things that at some point in my life, I need to record that. But if you've heard the original hymn, it was written in the 1700s by John Wesley. And it's a lovely hymn, but it just kind of, the words are kind of archaic. And I thought, what can I do with this that will help this generation of listeners connect with this great song? And so right before I went down to Nashville to record, I got this idea to add a new chorus to it that would help us connect with the words personally, because the verses are talking about a future tense, "Come, thou long expected Jesus." And the irony of the song is that, well, Jesus has already been born. You know, he's already come, you know, at least a savior. And so how do we connect with that? And so I thought, you know what? We can all use more of God. I can use more of the Lord every single day of my life. So I wrote this chorus that brings it into the present that says, "Come, shine your light upon us. Come, rule and reign among us." You know, just, you know, come and be more a part of my life. And so it suddenly became a great worship song. And I went to Nashville and played it for the producer. He did the strangest thing. He brought out a number two Ticonderoga wooden pencil, and he started hitting it on the guitar strings with this crazy rhythm. And he's like, "What do you think about this? Like, what if we gave it this rhythmic drive behind the words?" And I was like, "Oh, go for it. That's wonderful." So if you listen carefully to the song, you will actually hear the pencil bouncing on the strings. And then we built the arrangement actually on top of the pencil, as strange as that sounds. And then the icing on the cake was bringing Phil Kagi into the mix. And you can hear some of his just crazy, wonderful electric guitar licks in between the words. And I just think the whole arrangement went over the top.
Absolutely. It's an amazing song. And I'm curious, how did you get hooked up with Phil Kagi, of all people?
Right. About 10 years ago, I had done an earlier Christmas album. I've recorded a lot of Christmas music. And I was working with Billy Smiley at the time. And I told Billy that I wanted to record a particular song with him. I could hear Phil's, like some of his early acoustic guitar work. I could hear some of that on this song. It was "Do You Hear What I Hear?" And so he called Phil and asked him if he would be willing to collaborate with an unknown artist. And Phil is such a gracious and humble man. And he came alongside me and we ended up doing a video together. We later performed together and have recorded many, many songs together. And it's just a wonderful blend between his varied styles of guitar playing and my voice and the violin. It works really well together, I think.
Absolutely. It's definitely an amazing chemistry. And so you're known as a classically, I guess, trained violinist. How much did you play on this album? What was the process in that?
I think I'm playing on three of the songs. I don't like to play on everything because otherwise I feel like it's not special anymore. So we save the violin for those moments where it really shines. There's a big violin solo in the French Carol, which I think is the second track. And then I do a little bit of Celtic fiddling on two of the other songs and just some fun little sparkly violin additions.
I've got to ask, this is kind of an oddball question, but the difference between a fiddle and a violin. Is there a difference?
I knew this was coming. There's really not. It's the same instrument. It's just the style in which you play it that makes it either a fiddle or a violin. Like certainly the instrument might be set up a little differently for one style or another, but it's really exactly the same thing. So, depends on the person playing.
Yeah, I've just always, because I'm not a musician myself, I always wondered the question or the answer to that question.
Yep.
Gene, you want to talk about some of the other contributors on this album?
Right. The producer is Grammy Award winning Jonathan Crone, and he's just a genius. He's been doing my programming work and a lot of guitar work for me for many, many years. He's a young guy in Nashville. And just has this brilliant mind that can envision what the sound needs to be for every voice. And he's worked with so many big names, Amy Grant, CeCe Winans, recently produced a song for Dolly Parton. So the guy's just all over the map. And I just felt like the way he treated my voice was brilliant because I do sing a little differently than the typical contemporary Christian singer. And he gets that, my voice needs to have sort of a different type of setting because I've got that Celtic woman sound, a little bit of classical in there, but not too much. And so he just knows the right balance for me. And then he brought in Gary Lunn on bass. Who else did we have? Ken Lewis did our percussion work for us. We had Blair Masters on keys. He's played with me for many years. And Phil Kagi, of course. And I think the rest of it was just the two of us.
Well, an amazing list of contributors there. Yeah. You mentioned that you played on French Carol. I think that's the next track. You want to speak about that title, that song?
Here betwixt the ash and darksome mild, sleep, 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 my little child. Angels from on high hover in the sky, keeping watch above the incarnate God of love.
That title, that song?
Yes. So I love to find obscure carols that people may not have heard, just dig up those old gems. And I was looking through an old hymnal a few years ago. Actually, this song was one that I had recorded on the original 2003 Christmas album, which was called Christmas Presents. And it's a beautiful 13th century French carol that I found in an old hymnal. I think that very few people would have heard it, but it's a lullaby for the baby Jesus, kind of sung from Mary's perspective. And it's just so stunning. And so the arrangement that we did is very ethereal. You'll hear me singing these super, super high Mariah Carey notes. You wouldn't even know it's my voice, but it really is. They're extremely high. And we just created this angelic atmosphere for the words to settle into. And the words of the song speak about the angels, the seraphim that are hovering around baby Jesus, who's this great God of love, which the song speaks about him being this incarnate God of love. So I sing most of it in English, and then I come back at the end and I sing the first verse again in French. And so it's just really special. Just close your eyes and experience it.
Well, again, I've had it playing around the house. We've got our Christmas tree and all of our Christmas decorations, and we love to hear new Christmas music. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're like sticklers for the old stuff, the 60s and 70s, yes, the Bing Crosby's,
yeah.
And
yeah.
But also I love the Celtic sound as mm-hmm. well with, you know, with folks of that genre. So we certainly appreciate, you know, your music abilities in this house. Gene, the next title track, I believe, or the next track is Sweet Little Jesus Boy.
Sweet little Jesus Boy, born in a manger. Sweet little holy child, we didn't know.
Talk about that song a little bit.
So that's a very traditional American carol that probably most people have heard. And I had to really think about how to sing it because my voice is different. You know, it's this Enya Celtic style voice, and I don't have, I can't do a big, huge gospel arrangement of that like you might be used to hearing. But I think the arrangement is so, so sweet. And I know we pulled it off. It just tugs at the heartstrings. Tyler Smith, who is Michael W. Smith's son, did this brilliant string arrangement. It's just heartwarming. And as you were mentioning, the traditional music of the 50s and 60s, it goes back to that sort of era. I feel like the strings just pull you right back in. You know, it could be Dean Martin's arrangement or Frank Sinatra. It's very traditional and gorgeous.
Well, it certainly is. And the next track, yes. And you're going to have to help me pronounce this. The last name is Bambino. I can pronounce that.
Over amid the snows, upon a winter night, was born a child, the Christmas rose, the King of love and light. The angels sing, the shepherds sing, the green.
Jesus Bambino. I actually don't speak Spanish, so I might be getting that wrong, but I speak French, but not Spanish. I had heard David Archuleta sing that with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and it was another one of those songs that I could not get out of my brain. It's like, I need to sing that. It sounds really hard to sing. You know, you have to have some classical trained chops to be able to sing it. You know, not everybody can do it. It's got a huge range. And, but I wanted to try. And so we did, and we gave it a really wonderful Celtic flair. It's got the fiddle in it. And, we kept the instrumentation much more like acoustic with, you know, cajon, you know, just hand drums and the fiddle, and mandolin is huge in that. So it's a little bit more folksy sounding than the others, but just makes you want to get up and dance.
Absolutely. So let's go on to the next track. And it's called The Holly, and The Ivy. What's that song all about?
The holly bears a prickle as sharp as any thorn, and Mary bore sweet cheeks. Jesus Christ on Christmas Day in the morn. Oh, the rising of the sun and the running of the deer, a playing of merry bargain, sweet singing in the choir.
So that's another really old carol. I couldn't find, I love to research the history of these songs. So this one, I could not find a date, but we're seeing it probably show up in songbooks in the early 1800s. These words are starting to appear, and it's this beautiful analogy of the holly and the ivy, and, you know, sort of comparing that to Jesus Christ. And I don't fully understand the analogy, except that the holly and the ivy, these are two plants that in Europe would have stayed green 12 months of the year. And so they'd use them to decorate because they were always green. And so I love that imagery of the holly and the ivy always being this eternal life, this endless source of joy and hope and peace, even in the darkest times, which is what Christmas is all about. And so I took this old song, you know, it's been recorded many times, and I'm always thinking, how can I genify this? What can I do? And so we really made it Celtic again, got the fiddle in there. And then I recorded, I had heard Jessie Norman's recording. She's an opera singer who's passed away, but she does this traditional version with a boy choir. And it just is so angelic and worshipful. So I wanted to sort of incorporate the sounds of bells, and again, some really high vocals. So if you close your eyes, you might feel like you're in a church and then there's a boy choir in there somewhere. And just very angelic sounding. I love how the arrangement turned out.
Well, and you mentioned going back and looking for those very old songs that many people have forgotten. And
yeah,
you have to wonder how many old hymns, how many old poems that speak of eternal things are lost. And,
yes,
you know, but I love that you're digging in the past and you're digging up these gems and putting a new spin on this music.
Yeah, it's really fun for me. I mean, it's great music. The words are so wonderful. And I love arranging. I think it's probably my favorite thing to do as I prepare my albums is coming up with arrangement ideas. You know, how can I, again, put a spin on this that's different and that's authentic to who I am? I've wasted a lot of time trying to sound like other people, so I try not to do that anymore. It's like, you know, how has God created me to sing, and what does he want this music to sound like? So that's a lot of fun for me.
I'm going to take a quick rabbit trail here, but you okay, sparked some interest in me. You mentioned that maybe at one time you were trying to sound like other people.
Yeah.
Why is there a temptation, I guess, with musicians or singers, songwriters, to sound like maybe their idol or the ones that, yeah, have influenced them so much instead of putting your own spin on things? Why do you think that is?
You know, it's a really difficult thing to be, particularly a Christian artist and recording artist, because what we do is art. And in order for that art to be appreciated, it has to be heard. And the tricky thing is, so how do you get heard without trying to promote yourself and become popular? You know, how can we do that and keep it pure without us being the center of attention? And the temptation is always there to, well, if I want to be heard, then I should do what this person did because they're heard and they're loved and they like that. So if I try to be like that, then they'll like me, you know, and I'm guilty of that. And I think I was heavily influenced in the past by other people I was working with who would say, well, hey, you need to sound more like Sandy Patty, for instance, or Amy Grant, or plug in the name because that person was successful. And whenever I tried to do that, it was a miserable failure. And it ends up not connecting with the listener, because in my experience, what connects with the listener is the heart. Just like my landlord, that music that I did was so simple and really raw, but it broke his heart. I mean, you know, he heard me sing and was a bucket of tears. And And it was the authenticity of my voice, not the perfection of my voice. So to me, it's like the greatest singers of all time that we think of as icons, Elvis Presley, you know, just plug in the name. They're not always the greatest singers, but they were authentic to who they were supposed to be. And that's what made them beloved. And so, you know, my advice to younger artists that are starting out is always be yourself and get rid of fear and that sense of, I've got to sound like this person to be successful. You're only going to be successful when you're exactly who God made you to be.
And I was going to ask you that question as well, and you kind of answered it. You know, what advice would you have with folks that are trying to use their talents on a bigger scale, possibly, or what type of attitude should they have, especially if they're followers of Christ? How should they use that gift just to express who they are and that their individuality, that, you know, God has given them a soul and that we're all unique, but he's given us different gifts. And how, you know, how do we express that, especially if we're musicians or artists? And I appreciate that answer.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to have vision. And when I started out, excuse me, as an artist, I went to a Christian conference in Nashville and I heard Margaret Becker speaking. And she just inspired me so much because she said, you know, she talked about winning Dove Awards and feeling completely empty, you know, just getting to the top of her career and not feeling like she had succeeded. And so she just encouraged us to go back to what God told us to do. You know, it's got to be bigger than success. It's got to be a vision that drives you. There has to be a why, W-H-Y, inside your heart. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And so early on in my career, I really spent time thinking and praying about that and believed that my vision was to connect people with the Lord. And specifically, my vision statement is to bring the sound of heaven to earth. In other words, show God, show people who God is through my music. And it's been very powerful. You know, God's taken me all over the world. I've done a lot of prison ministry. I've ministered to prostitutes and on street corners and coffee houses and, you know, gone to the lowest places. And the music itself has a way of touching the heart without any words. It's a very powerful vehicle to communicate the love of God. And so that's been my why. So I always encourage people, find out what your WHY is before you do anything.
Sound advice and full of wisdom.
Yeah.
Gene, the last track on this album is I Wonder As I Wander, W-A-N-D-E-R.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this song.
I wonder as I wander out under the sky, how Jesus the Savior did come for to die for poor, ornery people like you and like I.
I think it's, you know, I hate to pick favorites, but it's probably my favorite on the album. This was a song that was recorded on my first record back in 2003. And I had just played it at that time with a very cheesy keyboard in a studio. It sounded terrible, but, you know, it was, again, it was authentic. It was my voice and a simple keyboard, and it somehow was heart moving. And so I wanted to revisit that song. So we did it again. I am actually playing the keyboard on the new version on a much better keyboard, much better piano sound. And then we had Tyler Smith again, Michael W. Smith's son, create this absolutely gorgeous string arrangement around my voice and the keyboard. And other than the strings, we did it exactly the same way. And it's really stunning, worshipful, and especially for me. I listen to it and it brings me so much joy to hear the song 20 years ago and then hear it again today and just see the joy of the journey that God's brought me on during that time.
Well, all of these songs are truly amazing, especially in this Christmas season. We're just a few days out, basically, from Christmas. But I encourage you to purchase this album. You can do that by going to GeneWatson.com, and you can find information there. So, Gene, I'd like to talk about some other things in your life, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah. So
you've also authored a book. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yes. It's called Everything Can Change in 40 Days. And the Lord, I felt like he wanted me to sit down and write some of my experiences over the past 20 years as I traveled, particularly in the United Kingdom and Ireland, which is where my ministry is really based at the moment. I just kept seeing the Lord do the most amazing things in people's lives, and my heart burned to talk about all these stories. And so I just started writing them down. You know, this is what I've seen God do in people's lives as we, just ordinary people, prayed and seeing the kingdom of heaven come to earth through the prayers of everyday people. And then also just my own journey of transformation. And so I think of the book as a 40-day devotional of transformation. So every chapter, there are little vignettes, little stories from my own experiences, but then also inviting the reader to discover how they can become unstuck in life and be transformed into the image of Christ, becoming everything that he's designed you to be. So it's a devotional, but it's also all of my life story sort of packaged in there too.
Well, now can they purchase this book through your website?
Yes, it's on the website. It's on Amazon. It's on the publisher's website, seedbed.com. But if you just, you can find it all over the internet. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a great book. Mm-hmm. I highly encourage you to purchase that as well. Now, Gene, you talked about your ministry, and you've got a daily radio program, I think, in Ireland. How does that work out? What is that all mm-hmm. about?
So I was ministering in Ireland a bunch of years ago, actually, and doing the same thing I always do. I'm like a traveling missionary, but music is the tool that God uses to communicate his love through me. So I was traveling in Ireland, and I was in a town north of Dublin one night, and a man came up to me after the concert, which was actually 1 o'clock the next morning, because I was praying with Irish people for hours, people that were just hungry for an encounter with God. And so he comes up to me 1 o'clock the next day, and he said, "I've watched you pour yourself out to exhaustion for the Irish people. Would you like a bigger microphone?" And I, at that point, I'm exhausted. I'm like praying for all these people one at a time. I said, "Yes." So he said, "Well, I'm the program director for United Christian Broadcasting Radio Ireland. Would you like to try radio?" And then he said the most astounding thing. He said, "If God has a word for Ireland, we want to hear it." And he felt, and I agreed, there was a calling on me to speak to the nation that had been there for a long time. So ever since then, I've been doing radio. I record it right here in my house. And at the moment, it's weekly instead of daily, because I couldn't maintain the daily schedule anymore. But so we record it here, and through the miracle of the internet, it ends up over there.
So just the platform or the content of this radio program, if you could just kind of boil that down, what are you talking about? Are you singing? What are you doing on this radio program?
So this is just speaking, and it's however long I want to talk. Really, they love to just let me talk. So it's kind of like a blog. And so I will just, on a weekly basis, be chatting about my life and what God's speaking to me. And I'll incorporate some scripture in there. And just, it's a time of encouragement. It's very basic, because I want anybody that tunes in to be able to relate to it. And they love it. They, first of all, I think it works really well because my accent is different. just like we're fascinated with them. They think I'm different. And I come from this strange land called Michigan, and they can't figure out whether I'm Catholic or Protestant, which is a big deal over there. So it's kind of the mystery of my otherness that draws them to me and connects me with that audience.
I'm curious, with your voice, with your talent, it kind of relates to that Irish, that area over there, that Celtic feel. Do you have you had like a heart's desire for that part of the world? Or because it really matches your gift so well.
Yeah, it does. And it's a little unusual because I'm not Irish. I don't have Irish blood, really. But when I was growing up in ninth grade social studies class, I did a report on the nation of Ireland, and I made a report cover of green construction paper, pictures from National Geographic. It was very simple, but I kept that picture with me for the rest of my life. I still have it, and I couldn't throw it away. I couldn't explain it, but I knew in my heart that if I didn't go there someday before I died, that I would have missed something significant. And I didn't understand it at the time, but it was just this deep, deep desire to go. And so finally the door opened for me to go to Ireland and perform. And of course, the Irish people connected with my sound because it was a little Celtic. I could play an Irish fiddle tune. And my voice was very gentle and sweet and different from how they expected an American to portray themselves. They see us as very brash and confident. And I came in with this gentleness and this sweetness and this attitude of humility, which was very disarming to them. But it drew them to me. It's like, she's approachable. She's vulnerable. So all of a sudden I was getting invitations to do conferences and speaking events and concerts and what have you all over the Republic of Ireland and also Northern Ireland. It was just really connecting with that culture. But I think, like, you know, how we know what we're called to do is where the joy is and where the desire is leading us. And I knew in my heart that there was a reason I needed to go. And when I'm there, I'm just filled with joy. You know, I just know that's where one of the places he's really primarily called me to serve.
Oh, do you get over there often? Because that's quite a journey.
It's been once a year. I'll go over for a week since COVID. It used to be more often than that. I'm hoping maybe in 2024 to get over there a couple times. Because when I go, it's a packed schedule with a lot of traveling to try to get as many places as possible. But we'll see. And again, you know, through the internet, I can always do that radio ministry, which is very powerful.
Well, it certainly is. And Jean, do you have, what's on your agenda? What's on your calendar? What do you have coming up?
I just finished a really busy travel schedule with Christmas concerts. You actually caught me the day after my Behold tour. So I had 11 concerts in the past 2 to 3 weeks. It was very full. And so today was kind of a rest day, a good day to catch up with me. So the new year, I have conferences in Montana, Pennsylvania that are set up. I'll certainly go back to Ireland. I'm going to do some more recording for sure, because another joyful spot for me is the recording studio. So I'm always making music. And I want to go to France, believe it or not. As I alluded to earlier, I speak French, and I feel like the Lord wants me to go there. I have some friends in France that I want to see, and also look for some outlets for the ministry and the music over there.
Well, Jean, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your new album, Behold Carols of Worship. And again, you can purchase this. I highly encourage you to do that. If you're listening on a podcast, you can go to GeneWatson.com. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, the link will be below the video. But Jean, have I missed anything? You want to add anything before we let you go?
No, it's been great. Thank you.
Well, it's been great as well. And Gene, I'll ask you to hang on 30 seconds post-interview. But thank you so much for coming on and talking about your music.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And until next time.